Okay, ATP is good. Good evening and welcome to the March 12th, 2008 Board of Directors meeting for the Oceana Community Services District. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. I've not done this before. Senior to junior or the other way around?
In order.
Okay. Director Dean.
Here.
Director, Vice President Bookout.
Here.
Director Mann.
Here.
Director Dahl.
Here.
President Hill.
Here. Please join us in the pledge salute. Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Brings us to item number three, public comment. Any member of the public may address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board. The board will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the board cannot act on items that are not on the agenda this evening. Would anyone like to address the board at this time? Okay, hearing none. Moving to item number four, board member items for discussion. Pamela?
I have none.
Bill?
No.
Barbara?
Nothing.
Vern?
Not at this time.
I have nothing at this time either. Number five, review and approval of minutes from February 27th.
On number 8C, flooding in Oceano, I recused myself, so I think that needs to be corrected there. I should also say I left the room.
Yeah, I'll write it that way.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other comment or corrections from the board? Comment or corrections from the public on the minutes? Hearing none. A motion?
I move that we approve the minutes with the correction to 8C.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the minutes with the noted correction to item 8C. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously.
One. I wasn't here.
I'm sorry. One abstention. Otherwise unanimous. Tonight we have Commander Brian Haskell from the Sheriff's South Station. Welcome, Commander.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Commander Brian Haskell, Sheriff's Department South Station. Just a few items to bring up this evening. We've had a resurgence of gang activity. I know that's shocking to everybody in Oceano. We've identified a new faction within Oceano that's calling themselves 21st Street, and that's starting to create a few problems. Last week, or actually on the 29th of February, we had some information come into us that there was going to be a fight over at the elementary school at around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We ended up having several members of our Special Problems Unit and Gang Task Force present. And we also had probation in force down the area. And as a result of it, we didn't have the problem that was anticipated. So I was quite pleased about that. That's the primary issue that we're facing right now. We've also had increased resurgence in burglaries, primarily up on the Mesa. We had several that were over on the edge of the Mesa over here, Bayview Lane in particular. We have some evidence that we're processing, including a photograph that we're trying to enhance that maybe we can put out for the public to view on the suspect. But we have had a resurgence, so we're asking everybody, keep your eyes and ears open. If you see somebody that doesn't belong, either in a car or at a location, please call us immediately so that we can get over there and check on that. We had an incident last night that luckily a gentleman over here next to the park called us immediately We got there, we got all four people detained about 5:30. It turned out they were looking for a rental, so it wasn't burglars, but at least we got notified quickly enough that we could deal with the issue. So that's what we're looking for, is just a quick call and a quick response on our part. And then the usual things: lock up all your belongings, don't leave any valuables in your cars. A lot of the residential burglaries that are occurring are forced entries into residences, and obviously that's something that's difficult to plan or prevent. My recommendation is burglary alarms. I hate to say it, but they do tend to scare people away once they've kicked in a front door or gotten in through a window. So we're just asking everybody to be very aware of what's going on. And that's all I've got for this month, if anybody has any questions.
Any questions, comments? No. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate everyone watching out for their neighbors and all that. Thank you very much. Okay, well, I'd like to take report number 6B, number 3, out of order so that Captain Leathers can continue on with business this evening. Captain Brian Leathers from the fire department with the report.
Thanks for having me. That's close enough. No? Good. That's good. Yeah. During the month of February, the department responded to 64 calls. 34 of those were within Oceano, 12 within Grover Beach, 7 within AG, and then 8 were with CAL FIRE. There was 3 responses out to the beach. Of the 34 calls that we responded to here in Oceano, we had 21 medical aids, 3 fire-related, and 10 other situations, PSAs, false alarms. Brings date, when this is printed, at 143 calls. As of today, we're at 163. So from the last week, we've went up 20 calls. This year to date, last year we were at 155, so obviously calls are still increasing as time goes by. Summertime hasn't hit yet. On the 13th of February, we did respond out to a trailer fire out on Post 6 on the beach. Fire Captain Angelo was on duty at that time, and by the time they got there, it sounded like the trailer itself was a total loss. His biggest concern was the propane tanks and the actual holding tank for the fuel. In that situation, it's just more of a, dump the water we have and keep it cool. It sounded like it did explode on him, but nobody got hurt. I think he just kind of, opened his eyes a little bit and went, whoa. We got some really great pictures of it from an off-duty fire officer from Vandenberg, so if I can get them printed off, I'll show you guys. Pretty interesting call. TPR was here last week and took some pictures of the fire engine and also with some of the guys for this consolidation with the joint fire chief and the battalion chief. So I think that came out in the paper Friday, possibly.
Mm-hmm. I did see it.
Yes, Friday's paper.
Yes, looked really good.
So that's pretty sharp. I was noted before, 6192, our first out engine, is out of service. We took out of service a week or so ago due to some pump noise that we weren't sure about. It is on its way to Modesto tomorrow to actually have it serviced, to actually get it taken care of. Not sure when it's going to be back, but I'm guessing hopefully within a week we'll get a return of it. Right now, hopefully it's just preventative. They can just tighten something up, do whatever, versus the actual impeller inside, shattering the whole pump, causing the whole pump, to go out. So it's going up to Burton's Fire in Modesto. We also had our awards banquet in the last part of February. So we'll be reporting here. Our rookie of the year was Sean Wathen. Great guy. He's one of ours. Guys we can't say enough of. He's here for us all the time. He's actually, since the PERS thing's starting to kick in, he's actually over at Grover Beach Fire Department right now. So we've lost his services for at least 4 or 5 months, but he's also got a full-time job now with the forestry. So we're going to lose him for a little bit longer. Our firefighter of the year was Paul Collada. Again, I work with Paul quite a bit, so it was kind of an honor for me to give this award to him on that night. Can't say anything bad about him. He's one of our troopers that comes, you know, to the calls whatever time of the day happens to be. Then our lucky recipient was Brian Fukuhara. He actually got our Manuel Vargas Award, which is to our association, and he also got the Chief's Dedication Award, which myself and Captain Boba kind of collaborated our thoughts together, and he got that award this year. So he was the recipient of two awards. Firefighter Lane just completed all his training, so he's on the books now. So he's actually doing some shifts. And as we speak, I'm in the process of training our last rookie. Hopefully he'll be done by tomorrow if things go well. He's done his written test right now, or he's done it. He's doing his manipulative right now. So hopefully things go well. And we did hire two others during the joint consolidation of the three departments. That was part of the test there. He's on his tricycle. So we interviewed 10 people, and we hired six through the three departments, and we picked up two at our station, so they're going through their process of paperwork now, and hopefully they'll be on board here in the next couple weeks. And then our goal is to actually have those six go to our own fire academy through the three departments, so they'll get all the same training for, you know, from the whole time frame, from the six of them. Other than that, it's been pretty quiet today. We only had one call today, so it's a good thing.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the report. Any questions from the board?
No.
Comments? Any questions or comment from the public? Okay, thank you very much, and thank the guys, and we're looking forward to issuing some awards here in the next couple weeks.
Couple weeks, they're coming up here. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Seeing that Jim Caton is here, we'd like to take item number 9A out of order if we could. That is administrative item 9A, consideration of the employer-employee relations policy. And this is consideration of the general manager's recommendation to approve a district resolution adopting an employer-employee relations policy. Patrick?
Yeah, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, the Myers-Milius Brown Act, which is a California statute, requires every public agency to have an employer-employee relations policy. During a couple of meetings with the personnel committee, we determined that it was the most effective way to do that was for me to consult with an outside HR professional. During the process of looking, I met Jim Caton. Jim was the administrative services director for the city of Fresno after he was involved in HR there for 20-something years. I'll let him fill you in on his background. He brought this proposed policy to the personnel committee. There were a few minor clerical corrections that I'll point out when he's done, but I'd like to introduce Jim and let him present this proposed policy.
Jim, welcome.
Mr. President, directors, it's very good to be here. Before you is an employer-employee relations policy, which is similar to those that you will find throughout the state of California for local government. It is similar in organization and format, primarily because the Myers-Milius Brown Act governs employer-employee relations for local government, and it states very, very clearly what can and what cannot be done. Most of the employer-employee relations policies in the state were developed quite some years ago, then refined and improved, and then copied to a great extent throughout the rest of the state. So the organization, the format, the definitions you will find are very, 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 very similar all over. As I told the personnel committee, I tend to over-explain these things because I'm very interested in them. I will try not to do that for you today. However, I will be here for any questions that you might want to ask. The resolution is divided into five sections. The first are general provisions, which include the statement of purpose and obligation, the definitions, employee rights, district rights, and procedural guidelines. Much of these reflect the provisions of the Myers-Mileas-Brown Act. The next subsection is representation procedures, which is probably what you will see the most of. The first subsection under that is the filing of a recognition petition, and this specifies what must go in that petition. It's fairly extensive. The employee organization must provide a list of the classes they propose in the unit, why the unit is an appropriate unit, a copy of the Constitution and bylaws, any affiliations with national or international organizations, an additional amount of information that is, as I said, fairly complete. The district response is that the board refers it to the employee relations officer, more about whom later, to determine whether there is compliance. Specifically, that all of the information has been provided and that there is an appropriate unit proposed to be established. If that is the case, then the employee relations officer writes a report to the board, lays all that information out, and the board confirms that the employee organization has met the criteria and that there's an appropriate unit. If that's the case, then the employee relations officer notifies the employee organization and the employees. Then nothing happens for 30 days. That holding period is intended to provide an opportunity for any other employee organization which claims to represent those employees, an opportunity to intervene, which is a term you'll find among HR professionals that says, no, you don't represent them, we do, and here's our petition to prove it. You will probably not see one of those, but it's nice to have the provisions just in case. In the event that the board has found that there's an appropriate unit and that all the criteria are met and that the 30-day period passes without an intervener, then the employee relations officer, with the consent of the employee organization, can find that 2/3 of a majority of the employees in the proposed unit want that union to represent them, and that all other criteria have been met, and therefore there is a majority support for that particular union. In the event, it comes back to the board, and the board makes the final determination. If the union does not agree that the employee relations officer should do that, or if there is not 2/3 support, then the Myers-Mileas-Brown Act provides that an outside third party that the two parties select must determine if there is majority support. We would prefer the employee relations officer avenue because it's quicker and cheaper. In the event the outside person doesn't decide it, but the criteria have still been met, then there can be an election. In any event, the determination of the appropriate unit and the formal recognition is an action the board takes. The next subsection is a procedure for decertification. It is routine and unlikely, but it is there just in case. There's also a procedure for an appeal. If the employee organization disagrees with the board's action regarding recognition, challenge, or decertification. There's also a separate provision regarding the determination of an appropriate unit, an action that the board will take eventually if an employee organization makes an application. This section provides the criteria for determination of an appropriate unit, the principal one of which is a community of interest among all of the employees. There are other provisions regarding management and confidential employees, operations of the district and its efficiency, and other criteria which are also taken into consideration. There is also a procedure for modifying units in case there are additional classes that should be added to a unit or deleted from a unit. Next is the determination or the designation of the employee relations officer. In this resolution, it designates the general manager as the employee relations officer unless the board decides by resolution to designate someone else. The next major section is the impasse procedure. In the event an impasse is reached, and impasse is defined clearly in the procedure, The employee relations officer would call a meeting of all the parties to determine if a resolution can be reached. If it cannot, then there are basically three options. The first, and this is voluntary, as are all of the provisions, is mediation. That uses an outside third party, usually the state mediation and conciliation service, which is free and very professional. Their job is to help the parties reach an agreement. They take no positions. All of the activities are confidential. And their sole purpose is to help the parties reach an agreement. If that doesn't work, the next option, which is also voluntary between the parties, is fact-finding, in which a three-person board, one designated by the union, one designated by the district, and a third picked by those two other parties, has confidential hearings, supervisors, since all are treated similarly under the MMB, wants to take a unilateral action. It can only be an implementation of the last, best, and final offer if there has been one. I'm not a big fan of those, but sometimes it is necessary to do that. But ultimately, whether it's done and what's in it is a decision the district board would have to make. The next major provision in the procedure is administration, which requires that the employee organization keep all of its information current. And it also discusses the use of district resources by the union and by employees who are represented by the union. It says specifically that it's either use of district resources or either what the board's policy is or what has been negotiated and placed in an MOU. And lastly, there are some miscellaneous provisions which are relatively routine. There's an awful lot of pages which covers what sounds like a little bit of stuff, but it's fairly complete. We recommend it to the board and would be happy to answer any questions you might have regarding the materials.
Okay.
Can I make just those three administrative corrections?
Yes, please.
On the very first, on page one, the very first, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Directors, it should be Oceano Community Services District. Under a statement of purpose and objectives, the second line, the word State of California should be capitalized. And on page 11, three-fourths of the way down the page, it says Article 4. It should actually read Section 4. And that's all I have.
Where was the second one at?
The second one was on the first page, about halfway down at subparagraph A. It says Statement of Purpose and Objectives. Mm-hmm. The second line under that says the State of California.
Okay.
Should be.
Yeah. Thank you.
I had a question. The firefighters had some concerns, or they were going to look into changes for...
They were, and I neglected to say that. At the personnel committee meeting, two firefighters were there, Captains Bova and Leathers. No, Captains Bova and Angelo, I'm sorry. And they had three or four questions. Correct. All labor organizations, and right now, as most people know...
The bargaining unit.
Right. Yeah. That we've been petitioned by the firefighters to form or to negotiate an MOU. They'll have to go back now that we have a policy to follow. They'll have to resubmit that application, adding a few things. Minor, it's very minor stuff.
I have a question. You said the human resources officer would be the one that deals with this. Is he also the negotiator, or is he...
That's up to the board.
But that would seem like a conflict of interest, maybe.
It is not uncommon for one of the principal staff members of a district or a city council to be the chief negotiator for the district.
And the human resources officer also? Both?
That's usually who's designated. Not always. It kind of depends on the size of the organization.
Thank you.
And the provision, as you stated, was that by resolution the board could appoint whoever the board wanted to be.
Yes.
The representative.
Okay.
Any other questions, comments? I think we read through this very extensively in the Personnel Committee, and it looked to be very thorough.
Very thorough.
And will bring us into compliance. Let me ask then if there's any public comment on this item. Hearing none at the moment. Any other discussion or a motion?
I recommend that the board approve resolution 2008-03 adopting an employer-employee relations policy.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the resolution implementing the employer-employee relations policy. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Bukout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Thank you very much, Jim. We appreciate your coming and explaining it, and your good work. Okay, let me see if I can figure out back where we are.
We had a high-level alarm at the lift station. And on investigation, we found that one of the check valves was blocked open. The district crew was able to clear that blockage. One new sewer lateral was installed on Cienega Street, and an existing sewer lateral on South 4th had to be replaced. We had three meetings with the district engineer on repairing the earthquake damage in the sewer system, and that's still going on. And we also had a meeting on the installation of a sand trap in one of the state park laterals. In addition, five will serve letters were issued during the month. In the water department, we installed one new service. We had a big leak. The big leak was due to an automobile hitting a fire hydrant on Cienega. We responded to the incident. We were able to turn off the water, and the crew repaired the fire hydrant the next day. In an unusual event, we suffered some damage from the high wind storms that occurred during the month. The wind broke some pins and twisted the back gate to such an angle that it was inoperable. In addition, the small shelter that houses our weather station equipment was blown over, and both the instruments were broken. The crews repaired the gate and the weather station. February was a bad month for sick leave for us, other people too, I understand, as everybody was off sick at one time or another. We all spent some time on inspections and assistance down at the 48-lot subdivision on 25th Street to put in all new water lines. And the crew responded to and marked out several USA requests. They also continued working on the valve exercising program. As part of that job, they located and raised several water system gate valves that had been buried or paved over since the last time they were operated. Maintenance jobs were completed on Engine 5, the sewer cleaning machine, the antique streetlights, and on one of our pickups. In addition, time was spent on obtaining a permit from PG&E for the proposed streetlight on Melody Lane. We produced 55 acre feet of water during the month of February, and this was 36 acre feet of state project water, 14.7 acre feet of Lopez water, and we pumped 3.34 acre feet of groundwater. The total amount of water produced in February 2008 was 8.3% less than was produced in January, and it was nearly exactly the same as what we produced in February 2007.
Okay, thank you very much, Phil.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask Phil that?
Good. Comment or questions on the reports?
I have a question on that sand trap at the state park. Do they have a time frame when the actual sand trap will be put in there, or the one that's required?
I don't know. There is a time frame. We want to get it done the sooner the better. We don't want any more blockages. They are working with us. It turns out they purchased one, and it wasn't the right kind, so they purchased another one, and it's kind of like not the right kind either. So I've received several phone calls from the engineer in the last couple of days, and they're trying to figure out what to do. So they are working on it.
Okay. Is that something we can help them figure out the right kind to put in, or?
Well, it turns out that one of the people that was pushing the project doesn't work for the engineering firm anymore, and she working for the city of San Luis or somebody.
Okay.
That's the Wallace Group is helping us coordinate this, and who was it that left?
Oh, geez.
Joy? No, not Joy. Melissa.
Melissa.
Yeah. I can't call her last name right now. But.
Okay. Well, at least it looks like some progress is being made.
They're really trying. One of the things they're trying to do is they're trying to keep the total cost of the project under $10,000, because if it goes over $10,000, it's a major procurement, and then we're talking at least 6-8 months away.
Right. Well, we appreciate their following on and keeping on that. And I know that I think the sanitation district is hoping that comes to resolution too, so that it just minimizes the transport of sand for everybody.
As far as the light on Melody Lane, I know that there were a few people that were opposed to that in that area. You mentioned that the person that wanted it in had made contact with you while the work was going on. Has there been any contact from the people that have been opposed to the project?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so any comment or questions from the public on the report? Hearing none, receive and file, please. We have no fire items this evening, so we'll proceed to number the disclosure of emergency. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Bogart?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. It's been requested that we take items 8, B, and C in reverse order, so we will first consider item number 8C. Director Dean is asked to be recused. Yeah.
Excuse me. That's my item. Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, you're all fairly familiar with this. This is a consideration and recommended rejection of a claim for damages presented by Pamela Dean. In a document that was sent to the district,
Excuse me, counsel. Is this item number 8C first? Could we take that one first?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had B. Excuse me. We can do C first, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
This is a related item to 8B. It's consideration and recommended rejection of a claim for damages presented by Ms. Dean and Greg Jenkins. Last month, they presented a document entitled Claim Form for Oceana Community Services District, dated February 18, 1989. In summary, the claim states that the district moved a water meter from their property located at 1935 Wilmar Avenue in Oceano, that the district was not authorized to remove the water meter, and that the cost to replace the water meter on the property is $9,680.66. A copy of the claim is attached as Exhibit A.
Actually, there was no copy attached.
I was going to question that.
Yeah, and I have those here, and I have them for the second item also.
Okay.
So I'll pass those out.
I sent it to you. And you have two of them before you. This matter was taken up informally by the board back in February, at one of your meetings in February, so you should be fairly well familiar with it. I've provided in here an outline of how the California Tort Claims Act works, which you've also had some experience with in the past, rejecting claims. Without going into all the details, the basic procedures are that the board is required to act on the claim within 45 days after presentation. If you don't act on the claim, then the claim is deemed rejected and a statute of limitations exists within which the claimant is required to bring action against the district. If you do act on the claim and reject it, then that statute of limitations is somewhat shortened. We provide a detailed discussion of the reasons why staff has recommended that the claim be rejected, but that would be a rehash of what we discussed before. I'll be happy to try and answer any questions that you might have about that, or perhaps Patrick can, but I'm not sure it would really serve an awful lot of purpose to go over that again. The last day for taking action on the claim is on or before April 3rd, 2008. I'll be happy to try and answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Comment or questions from the board?
The exhibit says that the meter was removed around March of 03. And somewhere I was reading in here that there's a time limit on when this could be presented. Is that part of the reason that the rejection is being recommended?
Well, I'll defer to Patrick on that one.
No, not actually. We're rejecting it based on the district policies and procedures rather than expiration of a time limit.
Other comment or questions?
District policies and procedures. Did we provide, is that in here on this?
No.
That wasn't provided to us?
No. The staff report talked about the relevant sections of the documents.
But that wasn't provided as supplemental for us to review?
No.
Okay. Do we have that handy at all?
Sure. I could go get it.
Wasn't it provided back in February when you gave that staff report the same issue?
Right. The pertinent portion, you know, the rules
of why either council or the district or staff, district staff feel that it would be fair to deny this as well as just, you know, just something that for those people, especially that may be watching at home or so, that may not have seen the last meeting or the meeting where this was at.
If that's the wish of the board, I can read the staff report in detail, which I think outlines that.
Yeah, that might be good.
Okay. Well, I'll pick up at the top of page 2 of the staff report. The claim is vague and ambiguous as to what Mrs. Dean and Mr. Jenkins are requesting. While they state that, quote, the cost to replace this water meter is $9,680.66, close quote, they fail to state whether or not they are claiming damages in that amount, if they are demanding they not be charged that amount, that they only be charged $60 for application and reconnection fees, or whether or not they are claiming damages in an amount equal to the difference between replacement amount and the application and fee amount. The preceding vagueness and ambiguity notwithstanding, and assuming that the board can justifiably discern what the claim is requesting, Ms. Dean's and Mr. Jenkins' claim is sufficient as to form and substance. The claim was presented on February 18, 2008, with a date of incident of October 22, 2007. This falls within the 6-month statutory requirement. In order to comply with the requirements of the Act, the Board must make its decision and take action on the claim within 45 days after its submission. Therefore, action must be taken on or before April 3, 2008. Following action on the claim, the Board must give written notice of its decision and the action taken. The notice must be in a form prescribed by the Act. If the action is to deny the claim, then it also must advise the complainant. Analysis. Staff has reviewed the claim and finds no merit in the proposition that the district had no authority to remove the water meter from the subject property. 1. Claimants assert that a fully functioning water meter was removed from their property. In March 2003, district staff discovered that the meter on the subject property was still connected to a district water main by a polybutylene service line. Due to the defective nature of polybutylene, it has been district practice to remove or replace polybutylene lines as soon as possible. 2. Claimants assert that there is no ordinance which would allow the removal of the water meter. Water meters of the property assert that if the meter had not been removed, they would only have paid a $30 application for service fee and a $30 reconnect fee. On or about January 16, 1985, General Manager Hill signed a letter, which was supposed to be attached as Exhibit B. Okay. Specifying if a water meter, quote, if a water meter has not been servicing a parcel previously served within the past 5 years and no user charges have been paid, then all connection fees will have to be paid. See Section 5-22 of the OCSD Administrative Procedures. Close quote. As stated above, the meter removed from the claimant's property had not been used for more than 20 years. Because of the policy established in 1985, claimants were charged full connection fees for their development. Four. Claimants assert that the general manager has no authority to establish policy as General Manager Hill did in his 1985 letter. The policy established by the general manager was appropriate for the following reasons. OCSD Rules of Order, paragraph 6.3, states, the primary responsibility of the Board of Directors is the formulation and evaluation of policy. Routine matters concerning the operational aspects of the district are to be delegated to professional staff members of the district. OCSD Personnel Policy and Procedures, paragraph 13.1, states, general manager's discretion. Any problem, situation, or procedure not covered in these policies or any ambiguity or contradiction contained therein shall be handled in a manner that, in the general manager's opinion, provides the best solution. We have opined that minor technical administrative procedures which that, to an insignificant degree, modify ordinances, or modifies in quotes, ordinances, are within the contemplation of ordinances even though they are not specifically stated. And you might recall that we provided you that opinion at the meeting in February when this issue was discussed before. In addition, the implementation of policy requires interpreting the intent of the policymakers. In this situation, the general manager determined that the referenced letter constitutes a minor technical correction to make the implementation of the policy match the intent of the board when the original ordinance was approved. It is therefore staff opinion that the charge was appropriate in accordance with the policy stipulated in the letter dated January 16, 1985. Summary and recommendation. After investigation of the claim, staff can find no merit in the proposition that the district had no authority to remove the water meter from the subject property. We therefore
charging new water sewer customers for their portion of the existing infrastructure that's been paid for previously by customers who are already members of the district. That's basically what it's for.
So a meter that has not been used for several years would not be contributing to that infrastructure, and that's why meters after a certain length of time would be required to be to have a connection fee again.
I think the key issue here is that the person who originally had the meter and paid the connection fee that they paid hasn't had to pay anything for at least 5 years, no contribution to the system at all. So even if that same owner came back and said they wanted a new meter now, they would have to pay a full connection fee. And new owners are the same way. They have to pay new connection fees. So they're paying their share of the maintenance and capital investment in the system. The policy is a little more extensive than that because it's based on a percent, 20% per year. So if it hadn't been used for 4 years, they'd be required to pay 80%, 3 years, 60%, et cetera.
I have a question. Wouldn't another factor of this be, since this is a new building, a new structure being put there, there had not been a water meter to a house?
That is correct.
So it's
a new use.
And the other one, it should have probably been taken out 15 years ago.
Right.
Because of the lines and whatever.
That's correct. That's correct.
Any other comment or questions?
I think Ms. Dean's probably going to be giving some public comments, so I'd like to hear what she has to say before I come to any conclusions.
OK. Okay, at this point, we can ask for any public comment on this item, which would include Pamela Dean.
Pamela Dean Oceano, and this is 8C, the water meter removed and the water connection service removed. And I wanted to clarify my claim. My claim is that the meter and the service should never have been removed, and if removed, the reconnect charge should be $30. Of the intent of the district to discontinue service for noncompliance or violation and give that customer a chance to fix the violation. The district says, now I have to pay a brand new service for a brand new service connection, which is like a brand new service. So instead of having a service connection that could be applied or credited, as I have seen others do in other locations, other applicants or other developers have had water service connections credited to their account, so they do not have to pay a brand new service connection fee. And the district says the water meter hasn't been used in over 20 years. I have my sprinkler hooked up to a hose bib, and it is an irrigation line. It's been an irrigation line. My neighbors have said that there was a community garden out there. So I don't know who's saying what the history is on this, but there is some dispute, I believe, about the history of this. Actually working. Sprinkler's actually working out there. It was used as an irrigation line. And to say that because it was polybutylene, a deteriorated line, I would ask you to look at the 1987 ordinance, section 1, where it describes waterline upgrades. It should be an infrastructure improvement of waterline upgrade that should have taken place, replacing the old or deteriorated water main. That was not done. Everything was pulled out. It was done when I was not there and given no notice. What I have before me is a compilation of all our ordinances. As I've described above, ordinances for 1987 and 1996 relate directly to my claims. I have not found the 1985 General Manager Hill's judgment that the district should move the water, remove the water meter after 5 years anywhere. And the Appendix 1 administrative procedures that was quoted in legal counsel's report relates to sewer lines, not to water lines at all. And I have a copy of that here, too. So after reviewing all these ordinances, the previous board, so that was my question and my problem and my claim is that the water meter, the water service connection were both removed. I was not notified, and I do not believe that it relates to any ordinance that we have. So I don't know what's fair here. I don't know what's lawful here. But I don't believe what the action was either of those. Thank you.
Other public comment on this item? Okay, hearing none. Bill, you wanted to?
The 1985 General Manager Hill letter. Patrick, is that possible to obtain that easily?
Yeah, I can go get it.
Okay.
It says exactly, all it says is what's in the staff
okay.
report.
That would be one good thing to have.
Okay.
1996, 1 Article 3.
Right. That would take research.
That's research.
Yeah.
And irrigation line, do we have any water bills for that property?
Well, we don't. There could have been unauthorized use of the line. There's no question there could be unauthorized use, but there were no invoices. It was not a functioning water service line.
Okay.
That doesn't mean, pardon?
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That doesn't mean people couldn't hook a line up to it and use it.
Okay.
That could happen.
Who was that property? Did we check research who owned that prior to Ms. Dean? Do we have any records in our...
Oh, I'm sure we have. Well, I can tell you who it was registered to. I can't tell you who owned the property, but I can't do that now. I don't know.
Okay, that's not a problem. Right.
Could I interrupt here for just a second? I might have misheard Ms. Dean, but I thought she said the sprinklers are operating now. Is that what you said?
No.
Or are they're functional now? Okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you said.
And I guess the last question I have, it was a motorhome or a mobile home on the property?
Mobile home. I might have said motorhome.
So that's like a home. It's not like a motorhome. It would have been a home of some sorts.
Well, you know, mobile homes are licensed through the California Vehicle Code as opposed to a structure which is licensed through the county.
Okay, and so that's,
there's a substantial difference between a motorhome and a house.
Okay, and then that was before the CSD was formed, when that was on that property.
It was about the same time. It would have been about the same time.
So we would have had some sort of billing.
Time it was billed for, as far as what kind of water has been run through that thing?
Well, the thing is, the price of a service is $675. And it costs you that whether the service is already there. Because lots of times, if we put a service on a lot line, we'll put in two services. So we go out there, they come in, they pay $675 for the meter. There's many charges to new services. There's not just a meter charge. So they pay all the fees, and it's the same price, whether the meter's there or whether we have to, you know, push a pipe across the street, or, you know, some services has taken us 2 days to put in, another one 5 minutes. That has nothing to do with the fees.
And there was no reading on the meter. The meter hadn't been read in 20 years.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
But there was an old meter in there, yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it was a service being used.
It did work, Phil?
I'm sorry?
It did work?
Oh, yeah.
Whose direction? It was apparently 2003. Whose direction from the board? Was it the general manager, or did the water department just go out and remove it?
We found out it was a PB line, and we pulled it out. But like I say, it makes no difference in the charges whether the meter's right there ready to turn on in 5 minutes or whether you have to run 100 yards of pipe. It's still the same charge.
When the irrigation or the watering of the yard was being done, was that being billed? Did you get a bill for that?
I didn't water my yard.
Oh, okay.
There's another service connection on that parcel.
Well, you said you had pictures of it being watered.
I tried it to see if it operated, and I took pictures at that point. And that was the only time I used it.
Okay. Just
the
curious.
Other, my water, I have two water meters, or I did have two service connections on the parcel. I know that other water companies handle this a whole lot different than this particular CSD. They will allow you to disconnect, so you retain your service connection, and you can actually move it to a different location. So I know that other water companies within the county treat this a whole lot differently. And I felt that the water meter went with the land, that the two services were there, and they should be both usable to the land.
Council, did you look at the ordinances and information that Mrs. Dean brought to our attention this evening in preparing this?
I don't believe I've seen the 1987 ordinance that she's referring to, and the citation she gave was incomplete, so I was going to check with her after this to try and run that down. I think I have seen the 1996 ordinance, but I don't recall that I've looked at it recently.
Okay. How long do we have to respond to this and still be within the 45 days?
Well, the claim has to be acted on by April 3rd, or it is deemed rejected, which starts a relatively lengthy statute of limitations within which Ms. Dean can act. If you act on it before April 3rd, then the statute of limitations is shortened somewhat.
Okay. I know for me the problem that I have is I don't like sitting up here and trying to make a decision and getting additional information last minute. I know we talked about that last time this came up as far as information coming to us at the board. I think the thing we should do is put this off to the next meeting and let council take a look at the additional information that's come forward and take a look at it from that light, and let us have copies of these ordinances too in the staff report so we can read them for ourselves personally. And Pamela, if you would, when you if you have something to present to us, can if you as far as arguments on your side of this, could you please get it to us before the board meeting so that we have a chance to look at it instead of bringing it to us at the board meeting?
I'll do that. It was a little late. I thought it might go to closed session, and so I didn't get it to the board, into the board packages, and I wrote this up today.
Yeah. I also have to, within that legality, look at what is fair and at what is fair to you as well as what is fair to everybody else in the district who has been paying the, been paying the prices that they pay for water that maintains the system. Yeah. So that's, what we're weighing out here, or up here at on this issue. So that would be my take on it, is that we bring this back at the next meeting.
I'm not adverse to waiting one additional meeting, because that would still be within the time that that we can positively act on it within these required 45 days.
Correct.
I do have a couple of questions and comments. First one would be, when the district routinely issues will serve letters and permits, do we not look at the plans and the amount of use that's going to be projected for that? In other words, if a service at one point in time may have been a hose bib, mm-hmm. and someone is proposing to put a house and probably a sewer connection and many other things, is that not treated differently?
Without belaboring the point too much, you ask a very good question, but your question really speaks to the other claim,
okay,
which has to do with whether an option should have been given to Mrs. Dean to pay fees at the 2005 time that she discusses in that claim. So you can certainly deal with it now, but it really speaks most directly to the other claim.
Okay. I'll ask the question then later. And I guess my question for Ms. Dean would be, if you don't mind, one question. What would you consider a fair solution to the issue?
I'd like to just pay my reconnect fees that are laid out in the ordinances.
Okay, so that would be a total of $60.
Yes.
I have a question. On your claim alone, are you going to have additional handouts for that one? Had additional paperwork that we need to receive, we could just take them both. Now saying bring them back with having both sides mm-hmm. give us everything that they're supposed to, and if either staff or you don't get here and you say, oh, I don't have this, well, it's just kind of, well, then we're just not going to consider that part mm-hmm. of your case or staff's case.
It might certainly be appropriate to continue the second item as well. It is based on significantly different set of facts, and as long as we're continuing the first item anyway, It seems to me the best thing to do to have a full hearing of this is to get this second claim on the table out in the open. If Ms. Dean has some issues she wants to speak to that might require a little bit of further research on the part of staff, let's find out about it now.
Yeah.
So that we can do it, and it can always be continued 2 weeks.
Right.
And if there is any additional ordinances or anything with, that you want staff to look at and consider in their look at this, then provide them with that information early and soon so that it can be part of their report.
And it needs to be part of the packet, everything that we get.
I would think that no later than next Wednesday would be a reasonable deadline to do that, because that's the time that the packet is usually prepared. Is that not correct?
Well, then that's too late.
Yeah, that's pretty late. If I've got to do research and assimilate material, okay. I need it sooner than that.
Exactly. So you're looking at it within the next day or two, I would think.
And so on 8B, I did provide that at the last meeting. I did provide those ordinances at the last meeting, and I had highlighted sections. There are additional ones that I found, and council had cited one that I didn't find related at all. So that's... these things probably do need to be discussed further.
I just want to have everything in front of us when we go to talk about it.
Okay. So
I think that would be very well advised. Maybe what would be a... obviously, you'd like to see...
Well, I think she has everything already. You can give it to me tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I can give it to you tonight, what I have.
Well, then let's ask staff then to take whatever you have this evening and take that under advisement for our... so they can advise us.
Three, and Patrick says there's actually five, if I'm not mistaken. Is there five?
Well, yeah, but they're not nearly that big.
Okay, but there is five instead of three, two.
Well, there's ordinances, which is one binder. There's resolutions. There are three or four of those. I can't tell you exactly. And then there are President's Award binder. So that's what we have.
I guess my concern is that I've kind of taken it for granted that the directors all had the same information, and that I don't have any idea what Vern or Barbara got on taking office, or if they have that kind of material available. So
they were so heavy you couldn't lift
them. How's the rework on the ordinances and so the codification coming?
At the next board meeting, I had intended to bring a proposal to have our district council do that project.
But
it's complex because we need to renew the contract with district council. The two things are kind of interrelated.
Okay.
Can we finish dealing with this item?
I think we'd like to finish dealing with this particular item.
I had a question. Has our district ever removed these from other properties? Do we have a history of going out to other properties and just removing it? I mean, is there any history of that?
Are you talking about removing water meters from
all
the time? Yeah, I got developers working right now, at least four of them that have old meters on their job, and you know, we'll use this formula when we when they pay their fees. Like I say, they have to pay the Lopez water charge, they have to pay the state water charge, which is $3,000 or something for all this state water everybody's been paying for years. But yes, we use this all the time.
How about, Phil, more directly to polybutylene? We had a program at one time routinely replaced polybutylene services.
Yeah, we sure do.
All water systems did it's...
Replacing, yeah, but right. Just going to a property and removing
it. If it's not used, there's no reason to replace it. But there is a reason to remove it because it's not adequate service.
One additional question. There's a statement in here that says maintenance of meters includes the removal of meters when required. Just verify that if you...
Pipes, and we need to replace those pipes. You have to remove the meter to do that. You couldn't...
We've had cases in the past where there were leaks in the system traced to polybutylene. It's why...
Well, I'm not saying that the polybutylene wouldn't need to be replaced. placed.
Okay.
I'm just saying whether maintenance, just does the definition of maintenance, you know, mean remove, does removal?
That's what I'm saying. There's nothing that says that. We can't define it authoritatively.
I don't know if there's a legal definition of within.
I think that's one of the questions we're being asked to, to decide.
All right.
So is the consensus that we want to wait till the next board meeting to address this? Okay. We will then move to item 8B, having addressed 8C. This is the Dean claim, consideration and recommended rejection of claim for damages presented by Pamela Dean.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public. This is a separate claim presented the same date by Ms. Dean. It also claims damages in the amount of $9,933.96, resulting from her not being able to pay water service connection fees on her three-lot subdivision in March of 2005. She represents that this amount represents the difference between the fees quoted her on March 18, 2005, and the fees as they currently exist. And a copy of the claim was supposed to be attached as Exhibit A. It's been provided to you here at the meeting. While she does not specifically state as much in her claim, Mrs. Dean has stated in previous documentation that she should have been given the option of installing all connections and meters for her proposed building project at 1939 Wilmar Avenue during the processing of the parcel map with the county. Also, Mrs. Dean has previously alleged that she was not allowed service connections to her property line without a building permit, and that a special deal was worked out where all service connections would be installed with payment of water service connection fees delayed until building permits were obtained for individual lots. Mrs. Dean claims that this is contrary to district policy. The staff report contains the same general discussion of how the California Tort Claims Act works, so I won't review that again. Action on the claim within the same 45-day period, and so the claim must be acted on before April 3rd, 2008. Again, following action on the claim, there's a statutory notice that we have to give in a prescribed form. Again, there's a detailed analysis from staff in the report. The staff doesn't find any merit in the proposition that the district should allow Mrs. Dean to pay connection fees based on the 2005 rate. Consequently, we must recommend rejection of Mrs. Dean's claim. A summary of the reasons for this recommendation follows. Mrs. Dean incorrectly asserts that the practice of allowing connection fees to be paid only if a building permit is issued is contrary to district policy. OCSD Ordinance 2006-1, Article 2, Paragraph 2, specifies that the permit application shall specify the size of the service connection, the property to be served, and the purpose for which the property is to be used. This cannot be known with certainty unless a building permit has issued. A service connection is a line that is capped. These capped lines can be installed to the property line before the installation of curb, gutter, and sidewalk for the purpose of obtaining approval of the parcel map. Once the county has approved a parcel map, the developer can obtain a building permit, begin construction, install curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and pay connection fees. Many public agencies have standby or ready-to-serve fees, whereby property owners pay annually for the right to eventually connect to the water and sewer systems. These fees are intended to help compensate existing customers for the expense they incur each year to have water and sewer systems available for future customers. This district does not have standby fees because each year current customers make bi-monthly payments to have water available for future development through yearly purchases from the state water project of 750 acre-feet of water. The district has determined that new developers should pay back some of these state water project fees and has rationally adopted policies to carry this out. It is accomplished through charging new developers a fair share of these previous costs through connection fees. The connection fees increase each year to keep the buy-in equal to the amount existing customers already have paid. So the summary and recommendation is that even if the board construes the claim as a claim against the district for a stated amount, after investigation of the claim, the staff can find no evidence that she should be allowed to pay the fees quoted in the 2005 fee letters. We therefore recommend rejection of the claim. I'll be happy to try and answer any questions. This claim does stand on different ground from the prior claim. It is certainly conceivable that you could act on this claim tonight.
Report on the staff report. Okay, hearing none, then we'll have public comment, including Ms. Dean.
Pamela Dean Oceano. First, I want to clarify a statement made in District Legal Counsel's report about the practice of allowing connection fees to be paid only if a building permit has been issued. Actually, you have to kind of understand the difference between a residential building and a subdivision. And I was dealing with a subdivision. So if you're talking a one-lot residential building site, it will require a building permit before you can do any improvement on the site. However, I have a subdivision, and it operates under the Subdivision Map Act, and improvements are made under a tentative subdivision approval issued by the county. So all subdivision improvements must be installed. Curb, gutter, sidewalk, sewer, water, utilities, all drainage must be installed before the subdivision map can be recorded. And no building permits are ever issued until the map is recorded. So no building permits can be done until you have a recorded map. With a subdivision, you either build it or you bond for it. All fees are to be paid prior to the approval of the subdivision map, and that's in Ordinance 1996, 1, Article 2, Section C. Pay all fees, meet all district requirements. It's pretty simple. What legal counsel neglected to address were discoveries made when public records requests were reviewed for other projects in the district. Of the six projects I looked at, two were treated differently than staff asserts. One paid fees without a building permit on a residential lot, and one paid only a portion of fees on all lots, and those fees were only those that were going up 1,000% in the next week. I wanted to be allowed to pay all my fees, water and sewer, for my three-lot subdivision at the time that I came to the district. What I had to do, and it would have been an impossible thing to do if I were not allowed to put in all of these things. So all of this had to be put in before I could even get an approval for a subdivision map. So I've got three water lines going out to every kitchen would be required. So what you do is you count up all the units that will require water use, and you apply a plumbing code standard. I knew what size houses I was going to build, how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms, and that kind of thing. So I knew that up front. We did have the district engineer review all my infrastructure plans. So all of the plans for the sewer and water services had been reviewed by the district engineer. If I had not been able to do this kind of thing, I couldn't have put in my curb, gutter, sidewalk, or my driveway, or done any of the improvements that would be required for my subdivision. And I dispute that the district has no standby fees. I don't know what, they are not called standby fees, maybe, but what I paid were a minimum of $23.94 per month. For all those months that there was no occupancy, it was called construction water, but whether I used any water or not, I paid this, $23.94. If I used water and I used more than the minimum amount, I was charged for it. So I don't know how we can say we don't have standby fees. I was actually paying standby fees for like 7 or 8 months. So I'd like to follow what it says in our ordinances. I wish I could have paid for those fees at the time that I went in to request my connections. It's too bad that it had to come to this. So that's all I have to say on that part.
Would you mind questions? If I look at those pictures and maybe pass them through the board here?
Oh, sure.
Again, that's something we didn't have ahead of time to look at.
I'm sorry about that. I just got the staff report on Friday, and I didn't have a chance to put anything in there. So it's like kind of you have to respond one to another, and I wasn't able to prepare a lot of this. I looked, you know, I started Monday, Tuesday night, and this morning I put my notes together.
I think I'll say the same thing I said the last time we discussed this, was I do remember seeing a letter from you where you said you didn't say you you weren't allowed to pay them all. You said you, I believe you said you wish you would have the opportunity to decide if you wanted to do it or not. Right. Now you're saying, oh, I would have.
Drainage.
At the same time as this here?
Yes. That, well, it went in. It's called detention basins. I have three detention basins and underground stormwater system. And I put those in at the same time. Everything was put in that was required.
The receipts that you showed a minute ago, were those for a construction meter, also known as a hydrant meter?
No, it was the water meter that I had installed. And it's for 1939 Wilmar, which is the address. And if you wanted to see those, I can show you what those are, too.
Just to clarify one point, a couple of points that Mrs. Dean made. There's a little bit of mixing of related concepts, but they do need to be treated distinctly. The Subdivision Map Act requires that the subdivider provide various infrastructure improvements as required by the public agency that approves the map. And those infrastructure improvements can be either constructed before the map is recorded or they can be bonded for. But one way or another, they need to be dealt with. Those infrastructure improvements do not require that the meter be set. They require only that you have water to the property line. So it is entirely possible that having had water brought to the property line, at a later time, the property owner could change their mind about the size of the improvements that are going to get put on the property, or perhaps even go back and seek a zone change or something of that nature to change the nature of the use on the property. I'll grant you it's probably unlikely that it would have occurred in this case, but those options are potentially available. So there is nothing inherently inconsistent about the proposition that you can't really determine what the size of the meter should be until you know what the building permit is going to be. And that is a distinctly different event from the recording of the map.
Didn't you have
Via a private driveway, so it went down to three lots. And that was a result of the OCSD fire requirements for fire road.
Okay, other comment or questions from the board? Ms. Dean. Okay, thank you. Is there any other public comment on this item? Okay, hearing none, we have basically, I think, all of the information on this one, do we not? How do we want to proceed? Take it.
Well,
this evening or not?
No.
She did provide a citation to a 1996 ordinance that I probably feel a little more comfortable having reviewed it to determine if it's applicable to this situation.
Okay.
I think that answers the question.
Yeah.
In that case, then, I think we should ask that this be brought back at the next meeting. With the same stipulation that any additional information from whatever source be delivered to the general manager tomorrow.
Maybe council or general manager could work closely with Mrs. Dean for any additional, any other additional information she may want you to review.
Certainly.
Okay, in that case, then we have finished item number 8, utility items. We've already addressed item number 9A. Pamela, if you would come back and join us, please. Item 9B, then, is consideration of revision of the rules of order. This is recommendation to the district legal counsel and the general manager to amend the district rules of order. Patrick?
District counsel addresses.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, resolution, and then Exhibit A is the rules of order. And so I just wanted to make sure you you understood that. In addition, the rules of order make reference to the 1999 resolution adopting certain policies, and it's not attached to the copy that's in your board packet, but it will be attached to the final copy that will be signed as the resolution. So I wanted to call that to your attention as well. I'll be happy to try and answer any questions you have. It was resolution 1998-19.
Ready for questions?
Yes, comment or questions from on the staff report.
Just in the rules of order, the very last item on there is basically you want to go to Robert's rules for anything that is not listed in here. And this, there are other rules that are real typical or common that government agencies use as opposed to Roberts.
There is a short form set of rules of order that you occasionally hear, or excuse me, yeah, rules of order that you occasionally hear references to. But I can't recall it off the top of my head. Most references are to Robert's Rules of Order. Once in a while, boards will adopt a resolution shortening and taking out some of the Robert's Rules of Order procedure because they're too cumbersome for that particular entity.
But general consensus, general most agencies go with Roberts. Is that true?
Oh, yes. To the extent it's not covered by state statute or some other governing rule of the organization.
I know the county sent the advisory council a different set of rules of order that that is a lot of times used there.
Well, remember, Roberts rules only apply to the extent that we don't already have a rule in place that, that trumps it.
Okay.
Other comment or questions?
I'm just happy to see this coming to fruition.
This does bring us together.
Seems to be all the things that were discussed earlier, and I also appreciate council's effort on this. This has gone for a bit of a while and took quite a bit of effort. Is there a public comment on this item? Okay, hearing none. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the resolution number 2008-3, the resolution of the Oceano Community Services District adopting rules of order to govern certain operations and functions of the Board of Directors.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we adopt the resolution 2008-3, a resolution of OCSD adopting rules of order to govern certain operations and functions of the Board of Directors. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Item number 9C, financial reserves. Review of district financial cash reserves. Mm-hmm.
This item was put on the agenda a month ago in an attempt to get staff to generate an accurate financial statement. Staff has been unable to do that so far. We've also had to delay the financial audit, which was scheduled 2 weeks ago, because we don't have our financial information ready. Unfortunately, at this time, I can't give the board an estimate of when that will be ready. I'll provide another report at the next board meeting.
Patrick, you yourself cannot get into the reserves to see how they work, operate.
So far, I've not been able to assess the records in a way that I consider that I'm just not comfortable with it. We have our software is difficult to use for me. You know, maybe there may be people for whom it's a piece of cake, but for me, it's very difficult. I'm an accountant by training. If a balance sheet doesn't add up, if an income statement doesn't add up, I can't present it to you. Frankly, I've been trying to download it to Excel, and it's difficult to even do that. Sharon's working real hard. Our consultant is working real hard, and hopefully, soon we'll be able to generate data that I'm comfortable with.
So, do you want to bring this back at a particular meeting in the future, or do you want to just bring?
Well, I can almost assure you it won't be ready for the next board meeting. We could wait a month, till the first board meeting in.
Do you want to just
April
bring it back when you feel comfortable bringing it back?
Well, I can't. I mean, that's up to the board.
Well, you mentioned that this is a software issue, and mm-hmm. that obviously I would be concerned also if there are. You said the income statements don't add up. If that's the case, then I'm concerned. Is that due to, and I may be asking a computer question mm-hmm. rather than an accounting question here, is that related to the system or the software?
No, the AS400, the hardware works perfectly. There's no problem. I don't think it's one of the most reliable systems that was ever made, and we have no problems with the hardware. It's a matter of getting there are a whole bunch of temporary files apparently that are posted in various ways so that all the reports are not looking at the same data. If in a more modern system, that's they'll have a relational database, there'll be a database, and then you just do queries to get information out of the database. Here there are files that are pending that haven't been posted yet, and so the software, the program has to be written so that it goes and looks at all the right files in the same way, and I've experienced situations where the reports I get don't look at those files in the same way.
I'm familiar with that similar situation when I did was controller of a corporation for a while, and it's very frustrating because you go to pull a report and you think that you're looking at a certain set of data, and you ask for that same report in a different way and you get a different set of the data.
Right. During the formation of the budget for the next fiscal year, one of the things that I'm going to propose is that we do move to a different software, something that's more user-friendly and that'll reconcile more easily.
Yeah. It sounds like a big problem. And it may be an archaic mm-hmm. old software system mm-hmm. that might have worked, but now it needs to move on.
Right.
We'll wait until you've got it mastered.
Well, what I can do is, instead of putting it on the agenda, when it's appropriate, I can, in general manager comments, give you advice or status of what's going on.
Okay.
Okay. You might want to keep us verbally updated on the status of that going forward.
Yeah, it's important. It's a very important issue.
Okay, moving on then to item 9D, flooding in Oceana, discussion of the impacts of flooding in the community.
Well, again, I own Oceana Nursery. I've had some flooding problems down there. I'm going to recuse myself and leave the room.
Okay, this item, if I might discuss it, the staff report is that flooding in the Oceana community has been a persistent problem. Mitigation of flooding is not a power held by Oceana Community Services District Board of Directors. In fact, that authority rests with the county. However, directors can be effective in supporting community efforts to resolve flooding issues. Director Dahl has agreed to be a proponent for the individuals of the Oceana community for obtaining assistance from various public agencies, including the County of San Luis Obispo, possibly CDBG funding, in resolving the flooding problems affecting the community. And I believe what's being asked here is staff has presented a resolution 2008-04, while recognizing that we don't have authority to do that, that we'd like to support Director Dahl's efforts mm-hmm. on behalf of the community to hopefully resolve some of the long-term flooding.
They've made it about three times as long as it is, and that included a statement that that OCSD has drainage authority that was issued by LAFCO in 1980. Well, that got my attention because everybody had told me we don't have authority for drainage. So I called LAFCO to get a copy of that and talked to Paul Hood, who's the director, and he did a little research, and he came back and he says, in fact, in 1980, when the district was formed, drainage was one of the components that we were authorized to utilize. However, in 2006, LAFCO did a review of all the CSDs in the county, and they made a determination that it was a latent power, which meant that it was included in the original authorization, but we hadn't used it, so basically we lost it. So now we don't have, in fact, LAFCO has determined we do not have drainage authority. The problem is the county still thinks we do. So I need to negotiate with the county on what we need to say in this resolution to make sure everybody understands who can do what here. And I called Mr. Benedict, and I haven't been able to discuss it with him.
And I did some research on this probably 3 or 4 years ago and came to the same conclusion. And I think the determination was that the power was lost in sometime in the mid to late 80s because it was, I think at that time there was a window. If you didn't exercise the powers within a certain period
they
of time.
They were never activated.
Yeah, they were never activated. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's not a problem about whether we have the power or not. It's just that the perception at the county, at least with Mr. Benedict's, is that we do. And so I need to make sure there's a meeting of the minds there and he understands what's going on here. So I'd like to bring this back to the next board meeting with a resolution that we can live with and the county can live with.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good
county
idea.
County council could probably help them out, seeing as LAFCO used to be run by the county.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think once I tell him, he won't have any issue with it. But
yeah. This is something that is not going to happen overnight.
Right.
And if there's anything that any wheels that move slow, it's government. So. You know, this is going to be something we're going to be working on for years into the future. And, you know, if we've got to bring it back next week and our next meeting, that's, you know, that's fine.
I'm, you know, in the meantime, I've got it on the agenda for the advisory council to talk.
I had one thing. We do have authority over some drainage basins, and I'm hoping they're not getting that confused with.
No.
Okay.
We have responsibility for drainage basins, which is a little different than authority.
We own them.
Right. There are
property. We own them.
Yeah, that's in the nature of being the property owner that has to provide drainage for, you know, some right. improvements that they have on their own property.
I think we've tried to give them to the county a couple of times, but they didn't want them.
Yeah, well, the problem now is that stormwater management has become a huge issue. I attended a meeting last week. I was going to talk about it in general manager comments. It's huge. It's expensive. The State Water Resources Control Board has come out with a methodology where people who are responsible for stormwater have to do hydrology studies and all kinds of expensive technical things that are way beyond our capability. It's going to be very expensive for us because we own these two retention basins. So that's going to get nasty, I think.
Yeah, I think really so, nasty. Too.
Okay, then with that, we'll
table
this item until the next meeting, and we can revise the resolution. And I again thank you, Vern, for your efforts on behalf of trying to get drainage issues addressed as timely as possible. Thank you.
Did you want to take public comment on that?
Because
Antonio would
have okay, let's. Yes, well, I will take public comment on that then. Antonio, if you had a comment?
Antonio Maldonado, Oceano, and yes, there is a way that we can start getting our little town upgraded. And Mr. Dole, I would like to work with you. Okay. The other day, about 3 weeks ago, I went to pay my tax in the house. I spoke with some people there and told them about the problem of the flooding in Oceano. As you know, I've been asking for since 1972. Let me put it that way, okay? Over here, it's about 4 years, 3 years. Well, they gave me some numbers, two numbers. I came home and I says, why do I bother to call? They don't listen to you anyway. Well, I called, and to my surprise, the following week, okay? Tuesday, they came back, and they put some more tar on it. So my little space coming from my driveway, you know, the corner, is taken care of. And the number is public workers, and the other one is road operation. And not only that, I spoke about the across the street, you know, where all the water comes down, and they went and put a lot of, I forgot the name, but it's gravel, and all the holes that are there, they gravel all that street. So I'm very glad for the county, and I'm very proud that at least I got something down. And very, so maybe we can go through there.
Very good. That's an excellent report.
Yes, it is.
We thank the County Public Works for taking that action.
And I'm glad to see you all guys are steaming together. I like to see a team that's doing something. Thank you.
Thank you, Antonio. Okay, so we'll address that item then at the next board meeting. Item number 9E is not just a placeholder.
Can I explain that quickly so people understand? When we're preparing an agenda, I try to get things to the people to copy the stuff in advance, and I come up with a preliminary or tentative agenda on Wednesday. Frequently, I'm not able to complete an item, or there are questions that a board member has, so I take that item off. But if I've already copied an item after that, we would have to recopy it because it has the agenda item number on it. So in the future, in the past, that's what we've done. We've recopied. I think that's ineffective, and it's using a lot of paper we don't need to waste. So in the future, I'll have items that are just used as placeholders so that I don't have to recopy staff reports and stuff.
You need to get Mr. Cook out.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, this might be a good time to take 5 minutes. Let's take a break for 5 minutes and come back at 8:35.
President, this is attached to the staff report is a proposed tentative budget calendar for the next fiscal year. The main thing I wanted to do here was to try to schedule some public hearings for goal setting, if the board would like to do that. I think that's an important part of the budget process. And then look at the other dates to see if the board agrees that they're reasonable, and also to see if I couldn't find any budget calendar for the previous couple of years.
Sure.
So I may have left things off of here, so if the board's aware of other issues that need to be added, I'd be glad to add them in.
One thing I know that we've done in all previous years that I'm aware of is we had meetings with pairs of directors individually such that all of the directors could review and get their input onto the budget process.
Meetings with the general manager?
And the department heads.
And the department
heads,
right.
All three department heads.
So two board members?
Two board members at a time.
Okay.
So it would be...
And one by themselves.
And that's right. Obviously one...
Right.
One individually. So it would be almost analogous to a triple committee meeting.
Yeah, okay. And that's done early on in the process?
Probably at the point of where you've mentioned with the finance committee review would probably be at the same time with that. In other words, the budget is well drafted,
okay,
and it can be reviewed then in detail.
Between the May 9th and the 19th, is that what you're talking about? In that area, in that section?
Yes, or even expanding the May 19th.
Yeah, but I mean between those two items.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Patrick, can I get a copy of that? I don't seem to have that.
Oh, you didn't get this?
Mm-mm.
Sure.
If I'm not mistaken, last year we did this all together.
No, we didn't.
We did
goal setting.
Okay.
We did goal setting.
Yeah, we have goal had a goal meeting, and then the budget actually is reviewed by pairs of directors. Obviously, one director individually.
That's your public meeting. Of course, the public could come to any of these that they wanted to also, but the one, I think you advertise that one as the public
meeting. Well, I think that's, that's a regular board meeting.
Yeah, but on there it's called
the
public.
For public comment.
Yeah.
One thing that you might do with this is bring back, you know, in the light of it, or in the beginning of the talks with the directors, is bring back the established goals that we had all agreed upon prior to to you being here, and then that is kind of, you know, we're looking in the budget in respect to those goals.
Right. I had thought that would be part of that goal setting meeting, to review the existing goals and then to look at which ones should be continued and which ones should, you know, if we should have discontinue some and add others. Okay. So you're talking about doing it at some time before that?
That's it's just that you want to do that before we do the budget stuff.
That's one of the first meetings. Right.
And the way we did it last time, I thought, was very constructive and very effective.
Okay.
Well,
much
was,
more so than we
that was the best goal setting that we had in the 12 year or 10 years I've been here.
Okay.
He was really, really good.
The my understanding is that I guess each board member made a couple of recommendations of what they thought was important. Is that correct?
Yeah. Gina was there for the entire process, and she probably could fill you in with great detail exactly how it was done.
Okay.
And then whatever you bring to it also is, you know, fine too.
Okay.
I think we have minutes and notes of those, how we went about doing that to give you an idea, because it did work well.
Okay.
And I can look those up too.
Yeah, I think we all thought it was very well done and a fruitful exercise.
Did we meet twice on that?
Yeah. It did go very well.
Yeah, I might have one or two suggestions to add to that, too, that we can go over at that point if you want.
Okay. Sure.
Then again, there is no item 10G. Moving then to 10H, Social Security coverage.
Yeah, we've talked about this several times. It's a very detailed and extended process to get Medicare coverage, basically, for two of our employees. When the district was formed, there was a option in the Medicare system to exclude existing employees, so we did that. All new employees have had to be included in the Medicare system. The two existing employees that we have about a year ago now requested that they be included also in the Social Security Medicare system. We've been working with PERS. We've gone through the district had to adopt a resolution agreeing to participate with those two employees. Then we then went through an election where the employees were polled and they had to vote for it, and they both did. And now we're at a point where we need to approve a resolution specifically sent to us by PERS. We've got to use the exact resolution they sent us for it to be appropriate for them to make the application to the Social Security system to have us added. So that's what's before the board tonight.
And that is resolution proposed 2008-05.
That's correct.
So this is continuing the very detailed and choreographed process.
Working with PERS is always an adventure. But, you know, the good part is they always tell you exactly what you got to do. You can't change a word in their resolutions. They have to be exact.
Any comment or questions from the board? If not, then any comment or questions from the public on this item? Hearing none, then I'll look for a motion.
I'll make a motion to adopt OCSD Resolution 2008-5, Resolution of Board of Directors requesting inclusion of Oceano Community Service District in the Social Security Agreement for Medicare-only coverage.
I second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve Resolution 2008-5. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Sure. Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Item number 11 is report of district representatives. I attended the fire committee meeting on March 4th, and also Director Mann was at the fire committee meeting. The sanitation district meeting to be have the pump repaired on it. We discussed potential for disposal of some excess fire equipment that may be available due to the sharing of some resources with the jurisdictions of Rio Grande and Grover Beach and our cooperative efforts with them. The old business was fire grant opportunities. We had the CAL FIRE grant we talked about, and we talked about some potential grants, including possible FEMA grants. And Dave Matthew was there as our expert on grant applications and is working with the district and all the jurisdictions to help identify what are the most viable grants and the ones that would fit in most with our needs, such that we can focus and get the grants that we really need to have. Status of the fire dispatch was discussed. That's in place and has been approved by the jurisdictions. I believe the contract just needs to
that's be right here. Will you,
to be signed?
To sign, right.
Okay. So that's moved right along. The consideration of off-highway vehicle in-lieu fees, that request and action from the county was delayed until April or May, and some of the requirements are being revised. So there's no current status on that. It's in a delay period. We considered a report regarding fire abatement of property near Fountain Avenue, and it was finally conclusively determined that there is a wetlands near Fountain Avenue, and a Coastal Commission report was presented that conclusively showed that the property in question is a wetlands, which prohibits the district from taking any action in terms of weed abatement or vegetation abatement on that property. We talked about no parking signs for the alleys because parking in alleys impedes the access that's often or occasionally needed by the fire department. So we will try to get signs for no parking in the alleys posted until those signs. That was pretty much it for the fire committee meeting. The sanitation district meeting was a relatively short agenda. They talked about cleaning an internal inspection of the digester number 2. The project had been undertaken by the district staff. The district staff at the sanitation plant does really good work. They've this thing you'll probably recall, they put it out to bid and they got relatively astronomical bids on the order of almost $500,000 to clean and inspect the digester. Staff thought it could be done for probably half as much, and so they undertook the work themselves with limited contract assistance. And there's a lot to this job. It's they had to vent methane, dewater. They've got a centrifuge that's one that they're proposing to buy, but they're using it as a rental to make sure that they get exactly what they need when it comes time to purchase an upgraded centrifuge. The project is slightly behind schedule, but moving forward well and at great savings to the residents of the district and the sanitation district. So I was quite pleased that the staff had undertaken that. There'll be probably $200,000 or more saved that won't have to be expended for that cleaning and inspection. And then we also approved a $9,000 service contract for the coating of that tank. They pointed out that there's new reporting and sewer spill requirements. I think the district is, OCSD has already got those requirements, and they have them in the district office. The personnel committee meeting, I think we've already acted on that this evening, so not really anything else to say unless Pamela wants to comment on that. That's it for my report. Bill?
I have nothing.
Okay, Vern?
Well, I had no meetings that I attended this between now and the last meeting that we have. Remember off the top of my head, anyway. I've been going to so many lately, but we do have the advisory council coming up this coming Monday, March 17th at 6:30 here in the OCSD boardroom, and we're going to be looking at a six-unit for anyone that is on these advisory councils in the county. The planning department, planning and building department, is putting on a training, which they do periodically. That'll cover the basics along with other aspects of advisory councils. And if we're also going to be talking about any possible outreach to new members, and if there's anyone interested in any groups interested in being involved in the advisory council, that meeting would be a good time to come to look into that in order to be able to make it into this training and be up and functioning rather quickly by being if you're interested in being attending early. That's it for me.
Okay, Pamela?
I have nothing.
Okay, and Barbara?
I have nothing.
Okay. Comment or questions on the reports? Just a comment, during that training for advisory committee members, I've been told that that's very informative for people that might be considering taking part in the advisory committee, or if you just want to learn more about the planning process, permitting processes, things of that, what the requirements are with the county, it can be a very good education in a short period of time.
It is. It's going to be happening April 19th. It is not a meeting, a public meeting per se. It is a meeting of people that are on advisory councils. I'm sure that any public can sit in the back room and, you know, in the back of the room and watch and listen, but it's not a meeting that is a public meeting per se, you know, where it's public participation. It's a training, and it's very informative, and it's something that, you know, if you're on an advisory council, very very good to attend.
Any public comment on the reports? Okay, hearing none. Item number 12, general manager items.
I had just one item. We, as part of the Avocado Ranch development, there was a street light that was removed at the end of Mason. Is that the right street? At the end of Mason. Several residents approached me about seeing if we could, the district will have to pay to put a street light in. The street light going into Melody Lane is about $6,000 from the for PG&E costs, and then we did all the conduit and stuff with district staff. So if I might be bringing a proposal to the board for your consideration as far as putting a street light in at the end of Melody or Mason in the near future.
Is there a reason why this project was approved without streetlights and removing a streetlight?
Well, the streetlight had to be removed. There was no, I mean, it was literally right in the middle of the street, so it couldn't be allowed to stay there.
This is a paper street?
Pardon?
Is this a real street or a paper
street? Oh, it's a real street. It's
Basin,
a paved street.
Basin Street. It's next to that detention basin, and yeah. So that's
The street light was in the middle of a new street, yeah. Not the old street. It was at the end of the old street. Now it's in the middle of the new street, which is a real street. What I'm told is that the county uses when homes are built real close together and close to the street, that they don't necessarily put street lights in because there's enough illumination from the homes themselves to provide lighting. And there's always the issue of a lot of people don't like to have streetlights outside of their house. So if you don't ask for it, basically the county won't require it to be put in.
But we have control over streetlights.
We can ask for it.
Yes.
We can ask for it. We did
and
not
we
do that in this case.
We should have asked for it, I guess, when it was going through the
right.
approval process here.
That's correct.
Because I really am a right. proponent of streetlights mm. and safety and... Just as we had in Melody Lane, older folks were having problems getting out to their cars and where they could park and so forth, and they couldn't see. So we're going to pay.
Most likely.
Yeah.
And that was all I had tonight.
Okay.
Okay, board member items for discussion. Start this time with Vern.
I discussed what I had under the reports.
Okay, Barbara?
I don't have anything.
Pamela?
Nothing.
Bill? Nothing.
Okay, the only thing I have is I'm understanding possibly there is a...
We don't have any backup included, and I know that I signed a check last week that Mr. O'Reilly brought over to me, and it's not listed here as a prepaid, and I wonder how many other prepaids were they, because they're supposed to be included.
Yeah, none of them were included. I didn't realize I had forgotten that, so I'll put them on the next agenda.
Yeah, because the one I signed was, I don't even remember the amount now, but it would have been nice for you guys to see it. But we also need the backup on all these.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm new to doing this. Normally the AA does it. What kind of backup do you get?
There's usually
the
a printout
that shows
what the item and the short detail of the item.
Okay.
And
it's like the check stub, kind of.
Effectively, right. It's the information off the check stub is effectively what it is.
Because that, I would look at mine, or, we would be looking at everybody's, and I might say, oh, I saw Jim's, and I know he was at one other meeting that he forgot to put in there, or...
And it details out the, for example, the water and sewer breakdown of, of what the charge
is. Why don't we delay action on this to the next board meeting, and I'll include that on these items.
Well, you've...
I mean, there's very few.
Pacific Gas and Electric, you probably need to send out. I don't think I can wait 2 weeks.
Oh, no, we've already signed the checks. It would just be the prepaid. It'd be like a prepaid. We'd treat them all like prepaids.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Okay. And then item number 15, public comment. Any public comment at this time? Hearing none. Item number 16, written communication.
We don't have any.
No written communication. So with that, then, we're adjourned.